Before we begin the next chapter, I just want to thank you for all the amazing reviews you've written. They really warm my heart, give me the confidence I need, and help this show find new listeners. So thank you so much. And also thank you to all of my patrons. This show is commercial-free and will remain that way, but you can support my creative process by becoming a patron. Visit sonofelpodcast.com/support. It's only a little bit each month, but it makes a big difference, especially in helping me believe in myself. I love telling this story and appreciate you enabling me to keep telling it. So thank you, and enjoy the show. You're listening to Book 2 of Superman, Son of El. He is more than a story. He is more than a comic book superhero. He is more than a symbol of hope. He represents our greatest aspirations. He is everything we think we can be. And yet, even with all the strength and all the power in all of the world, he may not be able to meet his greatest challenges and redeem his family's legacy, for he is the Son of El. Chapter 12. Some Kind of Joke. Clark looked back on the aftermath of the Cord Industries incident as a complete circus. The tragedy of losing their friend and colleague Dan Garrett, aka the Blue Beetle, was followed by a series of hijinks. The moment that the Justice League rushed into the facilities, the same burst of energy that had depowered Clark and Garrett washed over the rest of the League, depowering Supergirl, Steel, Green Lantern, Black Canary, and the Flash. The Flash was caught entirely off guard mid-stride. His supersuit barely protected him as he crashed flat into a wall. The inner gang thugs and their division leader, Thaddeus Kilgrave, scrambled to escape the moment that Clark and Garrett were forced to leave them behind. The two men couldn't bother with inner gang while they ran to stop the launch of the rocket that ultimately claimed Garrett's life. Nearly all of the inner gang members escaped with a small portion of the ammunition canisters that Jarvis Cord had produced for them, though not all of inner gang's thugs got away. For normal humans, this weapon appeared as no more than a flash of light. So it was that the Justice League members who normally had no superpowers were unfazed by the detonation of the energy weapon and did what they could to round up the stragglers. Meanwhile, as this chaos unfolded, Clark stood naked, attempting to comfort Ted Kord over the death of Dan Garrett. Simultaneously, Clark did what he could to persuade Ted to help him find some clothes. As Ted's tears relented, he became oblivious to Clark's plea. He simply stared at the blue stone scarab his mentor had left him, just before sacrificing his own life. After an uncomfortable minute, Ted finally spoke.
"I don't know if I'm ready to be the Blue Beetle, but I do like the color blue. Like, a lot. Most of my clothes are blue. I would really appreciate it if you helped me find some clothes."
"Oh yeah, for sure. Let's go get some hot cocoa too."
Clark had barely managed to find a pair of pants by the time Kara found him. He was surprised to see she was still dressed as Supergirl, even without her powers. Before he could inquire how she managed to not end up nude like him, she was the one to ask.
"What happened to your clothes?"
"I don't know. Didn't this happen to you when you got shot by the ray gun?"
No, not at all."
"Oh, maybe it was the Flash who said that. I think he said he felt like he was naked after they shot him with it."
"And you went and took it literally?"
"I didn't mean to."
"I can't believe you. In your last moment of still having superpowers, you used them to make your clothes disappear?"
"I don't think that's what I did."
"You're ridiculous."
Clark could not disagree. He felt ridiculous. In the following days, Kara did not let up on teasing Clark over the incident. On the third day of simply passing the time at home, Clark's powers returned. This came as a surprise. The other heroes typically lost their powers for a week or more when they were exposed to Kilgrave's ray gun. When Kara saw Clark's powers return, she demanded he explain himself.
"No fair. How did you recover so fast?"
"I don't know. Good old home cooking, I guess."
"We've been eating the same meals, Clark."
It was true. She had been staying on the farm while recuperating from losing her powers as well. However, the next day, her powers also returned. Pete and Drew took it as a compliment, as they had been doing most of the cooking in the past few days. Before returning back to Metropolis, Kara confronted Clark and asked him to return the camera she had lent him for his undercover role as a photographer.
What did you do with that camera I lent you?
I'm not so sure what happened to it. It disappeared along with my clothes the last time I changed into Superman and before I lost my powers.
Well, it's Jimmy's and I need to return it, so conjure it back.
And how am I supposed to do that?
How are you even asking? You don't know?
Hold tight. I'll be right back. I have to go take off my clothes.
Take off your clothes? You're joking, right?
Just hold on a second. I'll be right back.
Clark excused himself to strip down in his bedroom before coming back outside as Superman. Kara's hands pleaded toward Clark, palms open.
Oh, come on. Where's the camera already?
Once more, Clark transformed, this time back into the suit he was wearing when he went to Cord Industries. The camera hung around his neck as though it had been there all along. Clark handed it back to Kara. She shook her head.
Why couldn't you just do that before?
Well, I didn't want the clothes I was wearing today to disappear.
But why do you have to change into Superman at all? Can't you just switch between outfits?
I like those clothes. I didn't want to lose them.
Clark's answer didn't matter. Kara's question was rhetorical. With the camera back and her powers returned, she could get back to her life in Metropolis. Jerry and Joey were sorry to see her go. They basked in the extra attention throughout her extended visit and also loved having their father at home, grounded. Lana felt the same. She cuddled up to Clark and was almost disappointed when his powers came back so soon. She wouldn't say it, but Clark saw it in her mannerisms the whole next day before Kara left. That night, after the boys had gone to sleep, he brought it up. He sat on the couch and wrapped an arm around her as she nestled against him.
You know, I destroyed Intergang's ray guns. The Justice League won't be needing me so much, so you don't have to worry about me not being around.
Lana lifted her head to look Clark in the eye.
I didn't say nothing. How did you know what I was thinking? Are you reading my mind?
No, I could see it in your shoulders. And you have this way of sighing sometimes. And you do this thing with your voice.
Oh, do I?
Yeah. And there are a few more other signs, but I just had a feeling. And I don't see any reason why we can't just keep going about our week as though my powers still haven't come back. There's no place Superman has to be. Or maybe I can fly us somewhere. Let's go on a trip. You and me.
Lana offered a little protest initially, but soon gave in to the idea. When Pete and Drew found out, they immediately joined in on the brainstorming. Drew was very specific about his suggestion.
Naples. You should go to Naples. There's a deli there that packs the most amazing picnic baskets.
Clark appreciated the suggestion, but they already had a plan.
We're already talking about going to my family home in the Arctic.
Pete wasn't fazed and seconded Drew's suggestion.
You're gonna need to bring some food along. You might as well stop by Naples and get one of these picnic baskets. I'm telling you, Clark, these things are incredible. You both could eat off of one of them for days.
The advice proved helpful. Clark and Lana spent the next 2 nights at the Fortress of Solitude. On the first night, they slept in the camping pod that Ray Palmer had left in the atrium within the palace. The picnic basket, full of dried meats, cheeses, and fruits, proved to be far more food than they needed. The next day, Clark showed Lana around the ancient Martian terrain and introduced her to the holographic memories of his mother and father. After doing what he could to integrate their holograms to speak English, he tried to introduce Lana to them, but it only resulted in an awkward silence. Clark was unsure if he'd failed to modify their language ability. Lana helped recover from the moment by asking,
"Can you tell me what Kal-El was like as a baby?"
Lara's hologram responded first.
"He was a happy child. Content and yet curious. I wish I could have gotten to know him better. He had not even learned to speak when we had to say goodbye. He was beautiful."
The hologram spoke with no emotion, yet upon hearing these words, tears welled in Clark's eyes. Lana wrapped an arm around him, and the hologram of Jor-El responded to Lana's question.
"I know I am biased, but I knew Kal-El was special when I first laid eyes on him. Though I can't imagine it is different for any father. I have believed in him beyond measure since his birth.
I had no doubt in my mind that the tiny baby I held in my arms had more potential than the world could ever know.
Clark looked down, shuffling his feet.
I sure hope so.
Lana turned to face him, taking both his hands into her own.
I have no doubt, Clark, that you've already met that potential and more. There's no fixing this world once and for all, but you've made it a better place, and you've inspired people to make it better for themselves.
Clark's doubt still lingered, but in light of Lana's words, he put up no effort to refute her. On their second night at the palace, they slept in the round room with its tiered plush floors and many pillows. The crystal walls danced with the light of the aurora borealis. Cuddling under their blankets while watching the pinks and greens shimmer, Lana told Clark all about the planning she, Martha, Pete, and Drew had already done for the Harvest Ball. The event was only a couple of weeks away. Clark felt a little out of the loop as he listened. He had not realized how much of his attention he'd been giving to his various projects. His sustainability conferences, time with the boys, and helping out with the Justice League were so large in his mind that he had let the ball slip altogether.
I'm sorry I haven't been more help.
What? No, not at all. Have you been listening to all the decoration plans we have? We're going to need you to put it all up.
Sure enough, when the event came around, most of the labor did indeed land on Clark. It was by far the most ambitious Harvest Ball yet. The exotic fabric they had used over the years fanned out from the ceiling with colorful lights illuminating the crevices. Ray Palmer had made giant inflatable slides for the event. This year, he delivered them himself, not wanting to miss the party. It turned out, Ray was a particularly flamboyant dancer. Taking a break from the dance floor, he got himself a beverage and found Clark and Lana to chat with.
Hey kids, you two really know how to throw a party.
Clark blushed, but it wasn't visible under the lighting.
I barely did anything.
Lana playfully pat Clark on the wrist in admonishment.
Don't listen to him, he did most of the work.
Ray laughed at them both.
Ha, that's what I like to hear. You two make a great team. Those boys of yours are lucky to have you. Are you planning on having any more kids anytime soon?
Clark shrugged.
Who knows? It's not off the table.
Lana raised a finger to her lower lip as she reluctantly hinted.
It might be a bit sooner than we were thinking.
Clark and Ray didn't fully register at first, but the conversation fell silent as they put the pieces together. Ray was the first to respond.
Well, congratulations.
Clark's mouth opened, but the words didn't form. Ray caught on to his surprise.
I see this is a recent change of circumstances.
Lana clasped her hands together.
Oh, I probably shouldn't have said anything. I found out this morning, and I was going to tell you tonight, Clark, but I kind of got ahead of myself.
The rest of the night was a bit of a blur for Clark. They had talked about the possibility of another child, but in the light of this news, Clark wasn't so sure how ready he felt now that the moment had arrived. The next evening, after the Harvest Ball decorations were packed away for another year, Lana shared the news with the rest of the family. Congratulations were given all around. Drew even teared up a little. Joseph and Jerome took a while to respond. Jerome had no words, but nodded solemnly. Joseph, as usual, had questions.
Does this mean we're going to have a little brother?
Lana clarified.
We don't know if the baby will be a boy or a girl just yet. Will you have twins again? Can there be a boy and a girl?
Clark assured him.
We'll see, Joe. We'll see.
Joseph's questions kept coming, each more specific and ambitious than the last.
If we get two more brothers, can we get a little car for them to drive in?
Maybe, but...
I think they would want a little car they could drive in.
This news warmed the household as the cold of late autumn took hold in Smallville. Conversations turned to expanding the barn by adding another room. It didn't take long for Clark's initial worries to wash away, yet something still nagged at him. When thinking about both the boys and now this new baby they were expecting, he felt acutely aware of his own mortality. Deep down, Clark still worried about Thaddeus Kilgrave and his technology. A few weeks later, when Clark was invited to the Justice League's holiday party at the Hall of Justice, he found a chance to learn more about Kilgrave and what he was up to. Mentioning the matter prompted the Green Lantern, Guy Gardner, to tell one of his favorite stories.
So I get in there, and these inner gangoons start scrambling, hurling those canisters in my direction.
Clark hadn't yet realized how much destroying Edna, Myrtle, and Gertrude had set Inner Gang back.
How does that work? I thought they needed those cannons to fire them.
Nah, they rigged those suckers into flash grenades. It'll still take away your powers if you get zapped, but it's a lot easier to see them coming when they're not shooting them at you.
What did you do?
I just used my ring to project a Mezzi shield.
Oh, what kind of shield?
Just some ancient tech from some old planetary empire. It uses waveform variant equilibrium to cancel out the energy blasts. Super useful, hon. The Green Lantern Corps adopted this thing ages ago. It's pretty complicated, and I don't mean to brag, but not every Green Lantern can pull this one off.
I thought the ring makes whatever you imagine. You don't just think of something and create it?
Nah, this is way beyond rocket science. Besides willpower, you gotta have a mind for engineering and mechanics. But I got all that in spades, so we're good here.
But why didn't you just use the shield of yours before?
Guy held up his hands in feigned surrender.
You think I didn't try?
Ray Palmer jumped in to answer, having listened in on the story.
We didn't have the precise calibration of the energy beam before now. But after confiscating those canisters from Court Industries, I was able to do some testing and get Guy the frequency calibration he needed to make the shield effective.
The mention of Cord Industries drew Ted Cord's attention to the conversation.
Yeah, but you don't have to worry about those anymore because we destroy the schematics and everything. Cord Industries is going to be different now that I'm in charge.
Ted was wearing a blue supersuit and had fashioned himself into a hero using the moniker The Blue Beetle. The scarab Garrett had given him was fastened to his belt buckle, though it didn't appear to be activated and it did nothing to lend its power to Ted. Ted continued his disclosure.
Uncle Jarvis was totally no good, but now we're changing our whole company profile. We're going into the super securities business. If you want to buy stock or something, this would be a really, really good time, because I have it on a good authority that Cord Industries' future is gonna look super duper good. Like, a lot.
Guy Gardner shrugged, giving up on finishing his story and backing out of the conversation now that Ted had joined. Ray had the opposite response.
I might just take you up on that offer. This suit of yours is pretty cool. You want to tell us a little more about how it functions?
The two of them fell into shop talk that was beyond Clark for the time being. He made his way over to a group casually sitting around a table. Mr. Terrific, along with Oliver Queen, his daughter Laurel, and Barbara Gordon, aka Batgirl. Mr. Terrific held their rapt attention.
So basically, out of the 896 ammunition canisters, Kilgrave got away with 143. But from our own first-hand accounts, we've seen 42 of these canisters spent in these makeshift flash grenades. And we can be pretty sure they spent at least one or two of them while designing that grenade mechanism. That gives us a pretty decent picture that they have less than 100 left, and it's a dwindling supply. From everything I've gathered from Ted, Intergang was solely dependent on Cord Industries to manufacture these.
Oliver chuckled to himself. So I guess it turns out Kilgrave is not the genius he sells himself as. Barbara offered a little more information.
From what I can see on our end, it looks like Kilgrave's finances were caught up in Cord Industries as well. Rumor has it that Kilgrave is selling off his weapon stock. We aren't sure what this means just yet, but Intergang is scrambling to finance itself.
Just then, the doors burst open, and the room was greeted by a new party guest.
Hey, Broses! What's happening?
Clark didn't recognize this tall, broad-shouldered blonde man wearing a metallic gold supersuit with bright blue accents and a gold iridescent visor covering his eyes. Behind him floated some kind of silent drone in matching colors. His entrance brought an audible wave across the room, something between a sigh and a groan. Only Ted showed visible excitement at his arrival, greeting the newcomer with a jovial hug. Guy Gardner and Rob Dubois, aka Bloodsport, promptly left the room together. Clark turned back to his friends to see the strained expressions around the table.
Who's the new guy?
Before any of them could explain, a hand landed on Clark's shoulder.
Here he is! Cherry! Let me see you.
Clark was thrust around to face this entirely presumptuous fellow wearing a naturally smug smile.
Yes, it is! Superman! How about that?
Ted Cord laughed in disbelief.
I know, right? It's super neat.
The stranger's hand stayed on Clark, as though they were inspecting if he was real.
This is amazing! Duders! Is this happening? Is this really happening? Skates, take a picky.
The man in gold saddled up next to Superman, wrapped one arm around his shoulder, and shook Clark's hand as he introduced himself, all while smiling toward the hovering gold drone.
Boosty Gold's the name. Put her there. Cherry!
Kara lost her composure altogether and broke out into laughter, spilling her drink. Booster Gold was unfazed.
Can you believe this, Brosies? History is being made as we speak.
The moment took Clark entirely off guard. His response was a meager question.
Who are you?
Booster Duders! Booster Gold!
Hero of the future!
But the real question is, who are you, Superman Stokely?
This strange fellow couldn't be bothered to explain himself, but from what Clark was able to piece together by asking the others, Booster Gold was some kind of, as he put it, superhero from the future. Though he wouldn't say from what year, and refused to clarify due to some time-traveling paradox business. Skeets, the hovering drone that accompanied Booster, contained within them innumerable abilities as they documented everything Booster Gold did. Their one-sided conversation displayed by Booster gave Clark the sense that Skeets communicated to Booster alone, through some kind of telepathic connection. Booster often laughed at and complimented Skeets' unheard jokes. Clark tried several times to escape their company, but Booster, along with Ted Kord, followed by Skeets, kept finding Superman wherever he escaped to. Eventually, Clark resigned himself to being in their company. Booster seemed to have a practiced spiel.
So I know it's woozy bad having a cam around all the time, but it doesn't have to be a problem-o if everyone can cool off about it. Stokely?
Clark scratched his head, hoping to get through to Booster.
Honestly, I hadn't even thought of that. But now that you mention it, I don't think anyone here wants you sharing pictures of our party.
Booster expressed exaggerated concern.
Super duper man. Duders.
I'm no paparazzo, Duders. I'm more like a documentario. But no one is gonna see these pickies until forever from now. Skeets has a holocam, so I can't just upload them to weblinks because no one can play hollow pickies until from ever from now. Stokely?
Clark put up little fuss, but he didn't feel like being interviewed, so he excused himself from the party and headed home. Though reflecting back, as off-putting as the encounter had been, it reminded Clark that his own public image could use some work. In the following days, through his column in the Daily Planet, Clark arranged to connect with prominent economics and environmental science professors at Metropolis University. After checking in with these professors, Clark stopped by the Daily Planet to discuss his project with Lois. He was soon halted by Kara.
She's in a meeting, so you'll have to wait. Do you even have an appointment, Clark?
Only kind of. She told me to stop by.
Well, now you get to hang out with me. But hold on. What's this? Spin around and show me the suit you're wearing.
Clark showed off his attire with a proud smile.
You like it? I made it myself.
You did not. Really? No.
Is it really that hard to believe? You've been encouraging me to try.
No, I'm just impressed by how well it fits. I didn't think you had much of a fashion sense in you. But this is actually really nice.
Clark wasn't sure this was a compliment. He did his best to not sound offended.
Well, I try to observe what looked good, and then I work from there.
Oh yeah, I forgot. You have super observation powers.
And what's wrong with being super observant?
Nothing, if you weren't always missing the obvious when you're caught up listening to some conversation a mile away.
I don't eavesdrop on distant conversations.
Sure you don't. But what's up with your beard? It's looking a little scraggly.
Oh, I'm trying to refine my style. I think this beard says more about my farming background.
It says you haven't looked in a mirror.
Clark stroked his beard, unsure what she meant. He had looked in a mirror. Nothing seemed off at the time. As Clark sought a way out of this fashion inquisition, Lois peeked her head out of her office.
I'm ready to see you, Kent.
Kara waved him on.
I have to finish up here. But you two have fun.
Once in her office, it was soon apparent to Clark that Lois was in no hurry to get to business. Instead of going to her desk, she sat down on the couch in the corner of the room.
Care for a drink?
Water will be fine. Thanks.
I am so done with this whole week. I'm glad my last meeting's with you, Clark. I could use some decompression time.
As Lois poured them both a drink, Clark sat on the other side of the corner couch.
What's going on?
Morgan Edge was trying to mount a hostile takeover of the Daily Planet. I'm only editor-in-chief, so I obviously had to keep up with events. Thankfully, his run fell apart when Wayne Tech got involved and bought more shares for themselves. Edge is the worst, so I'm just glad I won't have to work for him.
Clark remembered Bruce mentioning that Edge was a media mogul and member of the Lightkeepers. He was relieved to hear Lois had been saved from such a fate.
Congratulations.
They clinked their cups in a toast.
But enough about me. Tell me about your new friend.
New friend?
Booster Gold.
Oh yeah, him. He seems nice enough. A bit strange, and I don't know what to make of him being supposedly from the future. But his heart seems in the right place.
He must be doing something right, because you two seem to be spending a lot of time together.
Clark coughed on his drink.
Hold on, what?
Yeah, I mean, he's been posting lots of pictures of you two. Several an hour for the past few days.
That can't be right.
Lois looked at her phone as she teased.
No, it definitely looks like you. Not your best angles, though.
She showed the screen to Clark. He scrolled through the post to see the video Booster made of their introduction, followed by an array of candid pictures taken throughout the rest of the party. In each of them, Booster was posing for the camera with Superman in the nearby background.
I thought we agreed he wouldn't share these photos.
So, you two are pretty chummy?
He said he couldn't even share them because of some future technology issue.
Sounds like you are close.
Hardly. I just met him once a few days ago.
Well, you seem to have made quite the impression on the young man. From the way he makes it sound, you two are best buds.
Clark was about to deny the accusation once more when Kara burst into the office laughing. Lois also lost her demeanor, and Clark pieced together the prank being played. He looked sidelong at Lois.
I take it you've heard of Booster Gold before now.
Lois let out a laugh.
Oh yeah, for weeks now. Kara keeps me up to date on Hall of Justice gossip.
Clark turned to Kara.
And you knew about this the whole time we were talking? Why didn't you say anything?
Kara raised her palms to show her innocence.
She wanted to tell you, and I didn't want to spoil her fun. She's had a rough week.
Were you just listening in on our conversation?
Of course I was. I wasn't going to miss that. But don't worry about the booster thing. We've already discussed it. We're voting him out of the league tonight.
Whoa. That's a bit harsh, don't you think?
Hardly. We're not even sure how we ever let him in. Ted pretty much invited him. But who invited Ted?
Is it appropriate to talk about this in front of Lois?
Oh, Lois can keep a secret. But that's beside the point. Ted's threatening to quit, but most of us don't think of it as a threat.
Both Lois and Kara laughed at this jest, but Clark scratched the back of his neck, feeling hot under the collar. He felt bad for both Booster and Ted. This pang of sympathy was soon quenched. The next day, he received a call to his watch from a number he didn't recognize. When Clark answered, Booster Gold was on the other side of the call.
Super duper man, what's happened on?
Tutors!
I have some ground time and wanted to bing you up. Stokely! You want to do some patrols? Hit up the old superhero spots with me?
Where did you get this number?
Rosie, it was no thong. Skeets just scanned you and got your numbers, Stokely.
You can do that?
Tutors, in the future, any thong is possible. So what do you say, Super Duper Man? Wanna go and bust some crime with me?
I'll pass. Thanks.
You know it, my duders.
Booster hung up and Clark let out a sigh of relief. Looking back, Clark thought the sigh was premature. The very next morning, Booster Gold was calling again, inviting Clark to patrol the East Coast with him. Clark did his best to gently decline.
Look, I don't mean to be rude, but I prefer you only call this number in an emergency.
Okay, Super Duper Man. I'll check back in with you later.
True to his word, Booster called back after lunch.
Tutors, you missed an amazing morning. You would have loved it.
That morning, Clark had begun to feel bad for Booster, seeing him as someone who just needed a friend. But as these calls persisted, Clark suspected all of these conversations were being recorded for Booster to share. That night at dinner, Clark brought it up with Lana. Her belly was just beginning to show she was pregnant. In light of her very real challenges, she seemed confused about how Booster Gold was a real problem.
If you don't want to talk to him, why don't you just ask him to stop calling?
I thought I did this morning.
Well, can you block his number? Surely that's an option, right?
That seems a bit extreme. Being a superhero is dangerous work and he's especially immature. I don't have the heart to block him altogether. What if he needs help?
He sounds plenty capable to me. He is from the future after all.
Jerome, having listened to the conversation along with his brother, chimed in on the matter.
He sounds like Judy in her class.
Clark welcomed the fresh perspective.
Oh yeah? Does he? How's that?
Jerry paused his eating and thought about it a moment.
Well, Judy likes to go down the tall slide at school, but she needs someone to stand next to it in case she falls.
Joey explained Jerry's point.
But she doesn't ever fall. She just wants someone there just in case.
Clark nodded to the boys and shrugged. They said it better than he could. He decided to continue answering Booster's calls. Thankfully, there tended to be only two calls a day, though sometimes there were more. All of them were just the same. Booster barely listened while Clark attempted to keep it brief and just not say anything discouraging. Booster was truly an optimist.
Okay, Superman. All's cherry on the Eastern Front. All right then, you better get back to it. You know it, Duders. Stokely!
Whenever Kara visited, she teased Clark for his sudden media presence.
No, but really, Clark? I don't think you've ever been more popular. But it's more of a joke. Superman getting off the phone has become its own thing. It's hilarious.
Clark wasn't sure how he felt about this, but the thought of receiving any more calls from Booster Gold made him nervous. The tension of expecting a call hung over Clark's head throughout the next day. Yet by evening, that feeling had been replaced with a growing concern. In light of the past week, Booster Gold not calling was a bad omen. The next morning, Clark woke up worried. When he had still heard nothing by noon, he flew to the Hall of Justice, followed by the Daily Planet, asking if anyone had heard anything about the hero from the future. Kara dismissed the matter.
I heard he's run on hard times. Something about his agent stealing all his money and going into hiding?
That's too bad.
Is it really, Clark? This guy's a scumbag. He calls you every day just to garner fame and fortune.
This assessment wasn't entirely off, yet Clark still felt bad for Booster Gold. In a way, he too was an alien, stranded in a foreign world. While flying home from Metropolis, Clark's watch rang again. It was Booster Gold calling. Mid-air, Clark answered. Booster's voice was distinctly distressed.
Superman. Oh, Duders. I'm in a mess, Duders. Not Stokely.
What's going on, Booster?
Bad bread, Duders.
Booster was cut off and a familiar, deranged voice interrupted.
Well, we finally meet, Superman. I'm a big fan and can hardly wait to work with you. This is all very exciting, don't you think?
Joker?
The one and only?
The Joker's maniacal cackle sent chills down Clark's spine. The clown continued.
If you want to see your dear friend here again, we're going to need to play a little game, you and I.
What have you done, Joker?
You like games, don't you? All just fun and games.
What do you want?
My, aren't we impatient? Hold your horses, big guy. I haven't gotten there yet. Like I said, we're gonna play a game. This one's a scavenger hunt. I've got your gilded friend here in my hideout. And if you want to see him home safe and sound, you'll need my address. I put it in a safety deposit box in the central branch of the Metro Bank in London, just across from Buckingham Palace. But to open that, you'll need the key and to know which box it's in. To find that, you'll need to unbury a box I laid in concrete under a sidewalk in Gotham. But wherever will you find it? Easy enough. There's a locker in a Shanghai train station with the GPS coordinates to the box. But I know what you're thinking. Which train station? Which locker? Well, this is an easy one. I'll throw you a bone. In Central City at the Flash Museum, you'll find a note and the key to the locker. But before I tell you where I hid that note and key, let's make things interesting. I'm going to start a timer counting down 60 minutes. I've got our dear Mr. Booster Gold here under a funnel that, when my timer reaches zero, we'll release a vat of acid onto your poor little booster buddy.
Hearing all this, Clark had already started flying toward Central City. Joker finally finished.
All right, Superman. I've already started the timer. Are you ready to begin?
I don't have much choice, do I?
Good to see you understand the rules.
Joker's laughter went on uncomfortably long until Clark interrupted. Just tell me already.
Tisk tisk, so impatient. You'll find what you seek hanging on the statue of the Flash in front of the museum. The key's around his neck. You have 57 minutes left. Good luck!
The Joker's laughter drifted off until the line disconnected. Clark was already bolting toward Central City. From his experience, the route of the scavenger hunt would take him a little less than an hour, but there was little time to spare. At the Flash Museum, several museum attendees immediately spotted Superman and called out, hoping for an autograph. Clark simply waved back to them before hovering in front of the statue. As he lifted the small box to remove the chain from around the statue's neck, Clark looked into its face. It was a very good likeness of Barry Allen. Clark missed his old friend, yet there was no time to reminisce. Inside the box at the end of the chain was the promised key and a note reading in big red letters, "Do you want to hear a joke?" Below that was the train station address and the locker box number. Taking inspiration from his race with Barry, from years ago before there was even a Justice League, Clark steadied his nerves and took off toward the Shanghai train station. Along the way, though he couldn't sustain it, Clark shot forward with incredible bursts of speed, seemingly tapping into the speed force for mere seconds at a time. Clark felt fatigued by the process, but it was enough to get him halfway around the world in a handful of minutes. At the train station in Shanghai, during the early hours of the morning, Superman's arrival caused a small commotion. Clark eventually resorted to flying over everyone's heads to make his way to the locker in a hurry. Inside the locker was another note. Again, bright red letters at the top read, "Why did?" Below that were the coordinates to the box in Gotham. Thankfully, Clark's watch had a GPS function. Once more, Clark had to fly halfway around the world. When he descended onto the dingy neighborhood the coordinates had led him to, he knew immediately which patch of concrete to look under. Nearly all of the sidewalk was under poor care, but one section stood out as new. Clark felt bad that this one decent patch of sidewalk was the one he had to smash. Using his incredible vision, he looked through the concrete until he spotted where the box was inside of it. With one sharp punch, he broke open the sidewalk. Upon fetching the box and brushing the rubble back into place, he blasted the ground with his heat vision, melting the rubble before blowing it cool with his icy breath. It didn't look great, but it was better than nothing. Clark looked around at the neighborhood staring at him. He sheepishly waved and took off into the sky, too embarrassed to stick around. Opening the box, he found the final key and a note with a safety deposit box number. Above that was the same red heading in big letters, "The Chicken." Putting the two notes together, "Why did the chicken?" Clark had a feeling he knew where this joke was going. Soaring across the Atlantic Ocean with short bursts of the Speed Force, Clark struggled to understand the reasoning behind the Joker's simple joke and simple game. Thankfully, the Metro Bank in London was still open when he arrived, but only just barely. Clark wondered if the Joker had planned for him to take longer than this and have to break into the bank. Inside the safety deposit box was the final note. Across the top, in big red letters, it said, "Tell a joke," followed by "Ace Chemical Factory, 862 Union Way, Gotham." Clark thanked the bankers assisting him and rushed out the door. This time, he pushed his use of the Speed Force to its limit, becoming fatigued and slightly off course as he rushed over the Atlantic Ocean and back to Gotham. The Joker's question repeated in Clark's mind, "Why did the chicken tell a joke?" Once in Gotham, Clark hovered over the Ace Chemical Factory, scanning for Booster Gold. Only one person was inside of the building. There, he found the young hero from the future, along with his drone, Skeets. Booster was tied up on the ground, and Skeets seemed trapped by his own energy field. As promised, Booster was under the funnel, yet the timer had over 20 minutes remaining. Clark had not realized how fast he had been flying. Below the timer was a big red button. Clark dared not press it, but instead lifted Booster out from under the funnel. Setting the young hero down and out of harm's way, Clark removed the gag on his mouth and began untying his hands and feet. Once Booster's mouth was free, he could not help himself from profusely thanking Superman.
"Duders, this is so cherry. I thought I was done, Duders. I mean, like, I really thought it."
Soon, tears started flooding from his eyes as he began confessing.
"Superman, you have no idea. I really thought this was how I was gonna die. I thought being a superhero would be super easy here in the past, and I would finally be able to do something right. But of course the clown villain got me and made a fool out of me. And of course he did. I'm an absolute loser bench warmer, and I can't even do this right. Even with all the technology I took, I'm still a loser in the past.
Even after Clark undid his bonds, Booster sat on the floor crying. Clark decided he might as well press the big red button and stop the timer. As he had originally feared, the button stopped the timer, but also opened the funnel of acid onto the floor. It wasn't a lot of acid, but it would have been enough to hurt Booster pretty badly. Seeing it unleashed a new wave of tears from the young man. Clark attempted to console Booster, though he was hesitant, being preoccupied with deducing what the Joker's endgame might be.
You'd be surprised how dangerous that clown villain is. The Joker is serious business.
Yeah? Like, he's a cherry bad guy?
I'm not sure what that means, but yeah, he's one of the worst of them.
Duders, Stokely?
This was actually my first run-in with him, and I hope it's the last.
Oh yeah, he left you something.
He took off like right after he hung up with you, but he told me I was supposed to tell you about your present.
Booster pointed at the large, colorful box on the nearby table. Clark attempted to peek inside with his vision, but this box was shielded. A bow on the front of the box said, "Pull me." Clark turned back to Booster, who was preoccupied, fidgeting with a device that resulted in Skeets being freed.
You might want to take cover.
Skeets activated a translucent energy field to protect them both. Clark pulled the ribbon and the box fell open. Even the sides fell away. Inside, Clark was stunned to see it was full of kryptonite. In that moment of shock, he froze as a spring-loaded boxing glove was released from the center of the pile of kryptonite. It punched Clark square in the face, knocking him to the ground where he landed on his bottom with a thud. Disbelief washed over him as he took a better look at the kryptonite. Green plastic illuminated by lights built into the base of the box. Clark brought himself back to his feet, his ego bruised, and feeling just a bit confused at how fake plastic kryptonite had managed to weaken him. He looked again at the boxing glove that punched him. Written across it in red letters was the answer to the question, "Why did the chicken tell a joke?" It read, "To get to the punchline." Thank you for listening. I'm Isaac Bluefoot. Book 2 of Son of El was written and independently produced by myself. Thank you so much for joining me for this story. And thank you so much for recommending it to your friends. There's always someone listening, and that really warms my heart. And thank you for the amazing reviews. Sometimes I read them just to cheer myself up. So thank you. And especially thank you to all of my patrons. If you want to become a patron, go to sonofelpodcast.com/support. Follow the links there and become a patron. The show is free, but surviving in this world often isn't. So I really appreciate your support. This story was inspired by the Superman and DC comics and characters originally created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, with additional contributions by Charles Nicholas, Otto Binder, Al Plastino, Louise Simonson, John Bogdanov, John Broom, Gil Kane, Gail Simone, Megan Hetrick, John Broom, Carmine Infantino, John Byrne, DC Glansman, Steve Ditko, Gary Friedrich, Bill Finger, John Sakella, Julius Schwartz, Gardner Fox, John Ostrander, Tom Mandrake, Mort Weisinger, George Papp, Dan Jurgens, Jerry Robinson, Bob Kane, and Robert Canninger. Music in this episode was made by Blue Dot Sessions, Poddington Bear, Jazar, Chris Zabriskie, Beat Mechanic, Tortue Supersonic, Kyle Preston, Audio Resout, Eaters, and Spectacular Sound Productions. See the episode notes for details, and be sure to listen to the next episode. Chapter 13, The Big Punchline.